Welcome to Thrivin' at the Beach podcast. I'm Peggy Masterson, and I'm delighted to be your host. I am the director of the Partnership Grand Strand Foundation, and in case you haven't heard about us, we are the nonprofit foundation that is an extension of the Myrtle Beach Area Chamber of Commerce. Partnership Grand Strand was created by local businesses to serve local businesses, and we serve everyone across all 14 communities that we often and fondly call the Grand Strand. Our work puts us in a unique situation where we get the opportunity to collaborate and support many of the organizations that are busy building a better tomorrow in our area. This gives us a wonderful opportunity to collect the details surrounding these growth initiatives and then share them with you. That's really why we created this podcast. There's so much amazing work, we just had to find a way to get it out to you. I could not be more excited to be able to facilitate a way for our guests to tell you their stories, to share the initiatives that they're working on, and give you a peek under the tent on what's coming to our community. I hope you'll catch this wave of momentum and then share it with others. So let's dive right in. Hey, everybody. Welcome to our newest episode of Thrivin' at the Beach, where, as you know, our primary goal is to get you excited about the future of the Grand Strand and surrounding areas. And we do that by giving you an opportunity to meet the people that are busy working behind the scenes to power our success. And today's show is all about the role that foundations play in community growth. Our guest is Mike Mancuso, the current president and CEO of the Waccamaw Community Foundation, and I'm excited to learn all I can about the Community Foundation, as I hope you are too. But before we get into that, let me tell you a little bit about Mike. Mike has a very diverse background, and I don't think I've ever met anybody that was a nuclear piping designer before in my life, but he started that working as a nuclear piping designer for a shipbuilding company, and then progressed on to run his family business. He's done banking for 17 years, a little bit of economic development work in Ohio, and also some work creating a chamber in North Carolina. So a lot of diversity, a lot of experience that makes you uniquely qualified for the CEO and president role at the foundation, the Waccamaw Community Foundation. So in addition to that, I would also say that Mike has made his home here in North Myrtle Beach. He came here because his wife's family is from this area, and he has three children and seven grandchildren. So Christmas is a lot of fun, or the holidays anyway are a lot of fun for you. And one of the things that he comments, which makes perfect sense to me, is everything that he's done in his professional career was driven by wanting to make a difference in his local community. And I think it makes perfect sense that he's running this community foundation now. So, Mike, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, Peggy, thank you for having me. We appreciate the time with you.
So, Mike, you've had a tremendous diverse background. And I would love for you to kind of walk us through all of the roles that you have held and positions that you have been working in over the years that prepared you for the role you're in now.
Well, thank you for the question. I don't want to bore your listeners too long, but it has been a real neat ride. And at the end of the day, I look back to say it has helped me do what I am doing today the very best I can and possibly try to do. And it was not a straight line path by any means. Started out of school at New Purdue Shipbuilding in Virginia as a nuclear piping designer and worked there for 5 years on aircraft carriers and submarine nuclear power plants.
Wow.
And really just, dug into my creative engineering side there. Left Virginia and moved back to Pennsylvania and helped found my family's business. My father had been in pest control all his life and decided to break out on his own. And so we founded the family pest control business. And I was there kind of just to get it off the ground, but ended up spending close to 10 years as the general manager of that organization.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, opportunity presented itself, and I found myself becoming a banker. And started out in a little branch just down the road from my home in the countryside of western Pennsylvania. I knew everybody coming into the branch, thought I had landed in the perfect role forever. That grew into a 17-year banking career that ended with actually, I was working at the corporate level of Huntington Bank, which is now starting to pop up here in the Carolinas.
Mm-hmm, I'm familiar.
And my last role there was actually creating their incentive system for all 10,000 employees at the time.
Wow.
And from there, it just, you know, I now consider myself a recovering banker. It was time to move on to something else, and that's when I really wanted to narrow my focus and make a difference. Mm-hmm. And so I went into economic development in the little town we lived in Ohio, in Salem, Ohio, and ran a little place called the Sustainable Opportunity Development Center.
Interesting.
And helped kind of create that program and got it off the ground for them, and it is flourishing today. From there, our kids married and started moving south, so we kind of started following the migration. Ended up in North Carolina, a little place called Smithfield, North Carolina, just south of Raleigh, and took the reins of the Smithfield-Selma Area Chamber of Commerce at the time. And working with that board and that team, we created a regional chamber that really took on almost all of that area and became the Triangle East Chamber of Commerce.
Wow.
And by the time I left there, we were about number five or six in size of chambers in the Raleigh region. And what led me here was just, you know, I'd spent a lot of time in this market. As you had said, my in-laws lived in North Myrtle Beach.
Uh-huh.
My wife and I, back in 2014, bought a little condo in Little River just the other side of the swing bridge. And so we were down here a lot. And so I started to meet people and build a network here. One day I got the phone call about the opportunity at the foundation. And my wife and I had always talked about moving here. But I always said that if it was going to be a career move, I wanted it to be a move that was going to make a difference. I want to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And the foundation was the perfect place to be. So that's how we got here.
Wow, that's awesome. What an incredible journey. And I was just making some notes as I was listening to you. I mean, you've got the solid banking experience, and I know you do a lot of that at the foundation. We'll talk more about that in a minute, but you've also got the understanding of what it takes to run a small business, right? And you've also been in the economic development space. So when you said earlier, I feel like my journey has prepared me uniquely mm-hmm. for this,
yes.
It's funny how that unfolds sometimes, you know, and it isn't till we get to that point where we can sit back and pull it all together that we realize, you know, maybe the journey I was on was all worth it and I'm supposed to be pulling these pieces together to move this community forward.
You know what? I am a firm believer in everything happens for a reason. And I can tell you over the last year and a half, I've pulled out skills that I used back ages ago that I thought I would never touch again. And then you realize, oh my goodness, you know what? I must have had to do this for a reason because now I need it.
Yeah, and then we dust it off and put it to work, right?
Yep.
Awesome. So tell us about the Waccamaw Community Foundation. It's kind of its history, its mission, maybe a little bit about some of the investors.
Mm-hmm. So the Waccamaw Community Foundation was founded back in 1999. By a small group of folks that got together that had that giving heart and realized we needed a tool here in the region for philanthropic giving. And they got together with, and we just celebrated our 25th anniversary. So I actually had a few of the founders together and listening to the stories of how they started out, you know, basically all writing small checks to throw it in a pile to get things moving. You know, a community foundation today is a very rare thing in some respects because most communities don't have one. You know, you'll hear the name or the word foundation a lot. Well, there's different foundations. There are different type of foundations. It's like your foundation is an economic development focused foundation.
In many ways, yes.
In many ways. You'll have family organizations or foundations. You'll have private foundations. You'll have organizational foundations. They run the gamut.
Mm-hmm. Community. Now, are they differentiated like by 501c3, c6? Is that part of the difference?
Yeah, there's different IRS designations for some. Community foundations and others fall into the category of a charity.
Okay.
501c3. Private foundations have a tendency to fall into the 501c4 category.
Okay.
And there's a little bit of different rules there.
Yeah, I've just recently learned about all that.
Yeah, so. It's believe you me, I call my accountant when I really need to do that. But at the end of the day, a community foundation is really is focused on helping to improve the quality of life in the region it serves. And it does that through philanthropic giving, and it comes with some very unique tools that most foundations do not have. So as an example, as our organization has grown, 84% of our assets today sit in what's called donor-advised funds. So this is where individuals and families create funds at the foundation. Most of those are endowed funds, so they're building a legacy so that they can give annually to causes here in the region. And it's a wonderful tool, especially when it's focused on the region. You know, you have nationally based community foundations that really don't have a direct focus to a community. And we also today in our environment today, we have a lot of what I call commercial community foundations that are attached to like national banks. It's kind of an arm of another type of organization. They serve some of the same purpose from a donor perspective, but they are not focused on a specific community like we are.
Interesting. So define, if you would mind, the Waccamaw community. I know that it's probably a lot broader than folks may think, because I know you do an awful lot that bridges over into Horry County. And I just really would love your definition of how you and all of your investors define Waccamaw.
Well, currently the Waccamaw Community Foundation serves both Horry and Georgetown counties. But we also service Williamsburg County for disaster recovery funding.
Oh, did not know that. Okay.
And when you look at the regions that South Carolina is broken up into, the Waccamaw region is Horry, Georgetown, and Williamsburg County. So we kind of align ourselves with this specific region. And I think there's a lot of reasons to do that. When you look at where we sit along the Grand Strand.
Mm-hmm.
There's 60 miles of beach from the North Carolina line to Georgetown. You know, you've got a lot of communities right along the beach, including Myrtle Beach, but you have a lot of communities inside those counties. And I can tell you, and I joke with my board constantly, the first year I was here, I spent as much of my time as possible just traveling through the three counties and trying to connect with folks in those other communities. And I put 20,000 miles on my car and never left the two counties.
Wow.
You know, so it's also a very big area. And I think it's important for us to understand the symbiotic relationship between our communities. Myrtle Beach sits here on the coast, but it would not exist if it didn't have the connection and support of all these inland communities here in Horry and Georgetown counties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where our employment base comes from. That's where our suppliers come from. That's where, how most of our housing is located, and people commute in to service our tourist industry. And so together we make this all work.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's so key, this notion of being together. We're so much stronger when we all work together and help each other succeed. So the work that the Community Foundation does is an excellent example of that. And I was wondering if maybe you might tell us a little bit about some of the things that your foundation has been involved in,
mm-hmm.
and maybe some things that you're planning to get involved in.
Okay. Well, we've been involved in a lot of things over 25 years. The list goes on. We'd be here for months going through that list. But, you know, when you look at the region, I think let me go back for a minute and help everybody understand our main focus, and that is to build sustainable philanthropy for the region. So that is our mission. And when you really dig into that little phrase, you know, what is philanthropy? We're building endowed funds that will continue to pay into perpetuity into this region. And in a simple sense, and I try to explain this even to donors today, if you have $1 million sitting invested in a fund at Waccamaw, it is going to produce 4% spendable annually forever. That is the goal. So for every $1 million we have in a fund, that's $40,000 of investment back into the community year after year after year. And when you start to do the math on that, it gets pretty incredible.
Wow, I guess so.
Yeah. And it's just one piece of the funding structure that supports the nonprofits here in our region. You know, we have close to 400 nonprofits that are doing an awful lot of heavy lifting here. Mm-hmm. And they are the reason, they're part of the reason for the success of our region. You know, as we continue to grow, we get great opportunities that come with that, but we also get challenges that come with that. And in most cases, our nonprofits are the ones that are in that space doing the heavy lifting day in and day out mm-hmm. to help with those problems.
True.
And the foundation's, you know, role here is really making sure that we build a robust resource for them to continue that work into the future.
Mm-hmm. So, as you said, 400 nonprofits that you work with, I'm curious how does the foundation or the investors, how do they determine how much they will reinvest in a particular nonprofit sector? How does that process work?
Well, that's a good question, Peggy. It's really up to the individual donor. So, you know, a lot of donors come to us with that one or two things that is really their passion. And that's what they'd like to support. But they also look to the foundation for guidance as to where the big needs are in the community.
Okay.
And we communicate with those donors fairly regularly. You know, part of our role, and I do most of this, but our team does a lot of this, is stewardship to the donors.
Okay.
It's really just spending time with them, helping to understand, for us, understand what the donors' desires are. But then also communicating what the needs of the community are. And when there's, you know, opportunities to invest in something that could really make a big difference. Mm-hmm. And we do that fairly regularly too. So it's extremely unique. It doesn't kind of fit any particular pattern. I always say if you've met one community foundation, you've met one community foundation.
they're
all different. Mm-hmm. And they should be, because they represent the region or the community that they're in. And it's so important why a community foundation needs to be based and independent in the region it serves.
Yeah, because you can provide that objective point of view.
Yep.
When you talk about stewardship, right? Do you have a team of folks that are doing kind of a market analysis of kind of that's helping identify where those biggest needs are? How do you figure
that out? We do
that
periodically. We are a very small team. We're a team of three.
Mm-hmm.
And I have Danielle DeLong is our operations manager. She's the one that's working directly with our donors every day to make sure that we're getting everything done for them. And then Jean Ann Brakefield is our program director. And she works with the donors as they make their granting. But she also works directly with the nonprofits so that we're kind of marrying folks up. So she does mm-hmm. both sides of that piece. I'm the third wheel in the cog, so to speak. I'm working directly with the donors. I am working with the nonprofits, but I'm also out in the community working with community leaders to really help identify what the next needs are.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can bring that back and share that directly to the donors. And I spend a lot of time on the phone just keeping our donors up to date on what's happening.
So wow, that's awesome. Yeah. So if I had $1 million, I could give you $1 million and know that it was going to be, as you put it, available in perpetuity to support whatever the biggest set of needs are in my local community. Is that
yes.
a fair statement?
That's a fair statement. Okay. You know, there's different ways to do investing in a community foundation. Endowment is the most common. So an endowment is a commitment where you put funds in and that that piece of what you gave is locked in to the fund. It's not spent. And that money is invested. And it's invested very conservatively. But the goal is to get enough return out of it over a long period of time that 4% spendable comes off of it every year and does not invade what we call the corpus, which is that initial deposit.
So that begs another question on who's making the decisions about where the foundation invests.
Well, we have a wonderful board of directors
that
works directly with our investment house. We actually have a committee of the board that meets quarterly to look at our investment policy. And our investment house here is Truist, based right here.
Sure.
And we work with their national foundation group that is specialized in just this type of investing. So this is not an open investment. You're just going straight to Wall Street.
Yeah.
This is a very specific type of investment, conservative, so that we're protecting those funds, and very, very balanced. And they've done a phenomenal job of doing that.
I'm so glad you came and explained all this, because what a tremendous opportunity for an individual that wants to make a difference and has earned quite a bit of personal wealth over mm-hmm. time to not only place it in a foundation like this, but to know that it's going to be well managed and put to good use for evermore.
Well,
right?
And that's the ultimate goal, and it's how.
Now I just need to find $1 million,
yeah.
and then I'll give it to you when I find one.
But Peggy, what I'm also here to tell you is anybody can be a philanthropist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody has a giving heart and gives in how they can give.
Right.
You know, the foundation is a tool for that.
Mm-hmm.
I've got folks that, put a small amount into a fund every year mm-hmm. and are letting that build to the point where it can start to give. We have and actually just sat down with our board here this past week, and we're creating what we call a legacy DAF, or a legacy donor advised fund. And what this is a placeholder for your estate giving. It allows a person or a family to go ahead and build this type of thing into their estate planning. And so when a person or folks would pass, a portion or whatever they've designated from their estate would then drop into that legacy fund. And they will, in advance, of course, give us what we call a bequest letter that really defines how they want that spendable spent into perpetuity. So it allows them to really truly leave a legacy. And that's another thing that we do pretty well at the foundation.
And I can see readily how your 17 years of banking experience is coming into play here as you speak about managing all these funds and so forth. Mm-hmm. Well, that's exciting stuff. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to spend a couple minutes now that we understand the foundation a little better and talk about the two initiatives that are kind of immediately being focused on by mm-hmm. your foundation. You mentioned one was growing the foundation, and mm-hmm. I wanted to see if you might tell us a little bit about what steps are you taking and maybe how can we help or how can the community help to grow that foundation.
And I appreciate that. So growing the foundation is truly a labor of love for the region. When you look at the size of or the asset size of a foundation, it normally resembles closely the community, the size of the community that it's in.
Okay.
Currently, the Waccamaw Community Foundation is just a little over $39 million in assets. But when you look at the growth that we've seen in the region and the growth that's continuing to come, when you kind of do the math and compare it to others around the country, we should be much closer to $100 million in assets and bequests. And when I say that, you know, it's bequests are those promises that we just talked about.
Sure.
And so our goal is really to get us to $100 million, both asset and bequests combined, and really work with the donors here to get that done. And if you want to extrapolate that, in my head, this is how I kind of keep it straight. You know, $100 million invested produces $4 million of spendable every year forever. And that's
so powerful.
When you start adding those numbers up, it kind of blows my mind. My banker mind doesn't even wrap around that. And when you look at history, if you look at philanthropists of the past, and you think about, and I look at, you know, from, I came from Pennsylvania, and Dale Carnegie was one of the you know, the steel guys.
Oh, sure.
Philanthropists. But I look what he did in philanthropy and what it does continuing today, you know, 130, 140 years later. That the power of the endowment is just unbelievable. And I'll use an example that I use a lot, and I use churches as an example. And I've seen this in my banking career and now in foundation world. You know, a church will get a gift from an estate, and in some cases, and I've seen this happen where, you know, they just, it's a sizable gift and they spend it to build a brand new building. And then you go, you know, 20 years down the road and, you know, the church is struggling to take care of the building, mm-hmm. Because they don't have the funds to do that. They spend it to build it. The power of the endowment can fix that, you know. So the funds come into the endowment and now you have a guaranteed income from that endowment that allows an organization to borrow the money to build that facility. And then when it's paid off, the endowment continues to take care of the facility.
Mm-hmm.
That's the power of the endowment.
That's a great example.
Yeah. And when you look at, again, I'll use Dale Carnegie and the things that he built, and there are lots of things still standing today in Western Pennsylvania that are still being supplied and taken care of by that endowment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one example. There's thousands of them.
So do you feel like, and maybe this is a silly question, Mike, but do you feel like most people would understand what you just explained to us? Like if they have generational wealth, let's mm-hmm. say, would they have a knowledge of how they could make these kind of decisions to be, you know, fueling the future for generations, or is it something that is still an educational opportunity?
I think it's an educational opportunity, and not just for high net wealth individuals.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
because I will use the example, and I had a donor a couple years ago has a small fund, and we talked about that legacy, and you know the answer back was, well, I really don't have a lot. And in this case, it was a widower that had no children, nothing, no one to leave. So he was leaving the estate to the fund.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you looked at everything that was in the estate, you know, it was still a sizable amount of money. It wasn't $1 million.
Sure.
But it was sizable. And when he passes now, that, you know, we've got his bequest. And we know where to spend that spendable into perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody can do this. And it's really about, you know, when you're sitting down doing your estate planning, how much do I want to leave behind in a legacy for one of those organizations that I care about or my church? And that's the conversations I have every day with donors, helping them set that up. So it is educational, but it's across the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think for sure when we do the show notes, I think we need to make sure we've got a link to your foundation so folks yep. can really kind of, if they hear this and they're kind of interested in learning more about it. And I think that, you know, maybe there's a role that Partnership Grand Strand could play in that education piece. You mm-hmm. know, we're working with the Angel Network here and, you know, some other folks that have generational wealth. And mm-hmm. maybe there's an education play that we could help. Yep. Come together, collaborate on, and build out.
Yes, absolutely. Appreciate that.
That would help your growth.
Yep. Well, I think it would help mm-hmm. our growth as a region.
As a region, right.
Because mm-hmm. I think we're a piece of the puzzle here. As you look at all of us, I think everybody has their place in helping this continue to grow and be a healthy region and community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you mentioned that your other focus is to provide regional leadership. I'm yes. really excited to hear more about that.
Well, one of the things, two things, as I first came into this role, spent a lot of time just really trying to connect with everybody in the region and spent a lot of time on the road talking to a lot of people. And what I saw was a repeating theme of folks dealing with the same issues, but not necessarily connecting with other communities in the region that are doing it.
So we're all kind of siloed, kind of
all
thing.
Siloed, mm-hmm. doing the same thing. You know, I'll use example of homelessness. Mm-hmm. Every community, every non-community, actually, even in our county open areas, we're all dealing with that issue, and unfortunately, folks are dealing with it by themselves, not necessarily coming together. Mm-hmm. In some cases, they are, and I saw different. Things like that as we went around the community. And then one day I sat down with one of the former board members and was just getting connected with, you know, the past of the organization. And Bob Callahan from Smith Sapp CPAs mm-hmm. was one of the founders.
Oh, wow.
And he looks at me and he says, Mike, he says, when are you all going to restart what he called or referenced as WALF? WALF stands for the Waccamaw American Leadership Forum. Well, up until that point, I didn't know what WALF was and kind of looked at him and said, okay, you're going to have to explain this to me. But in the early days of the foundation, Waccamaw Community Foundation and actually partnered with others in the area, the Bunnell Foundation in Georgetown as an example, and they helped create this leadership program, which is regional. And it's designed really to bring, you know, leaders from each one of our communities in the region together. We have a lot of great leadership programs in and around the Grand Strand, and they focus more on the local community where they're at. WALF is designed to kind of be the graduate level of that and bring people together regionally. So I went out and found and reconnected with the Bunnell Foundation and Jill Sands down there, mm-hmm. and we brought in Sam Cook, who used to work for our foundation many years ago. He's now a forester at the University of North Carolina, and he came back down here and helped us restart the program.
Passionate about it.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely. And I'm happy to announce that we've now completed three more classes of WALF since I've been here. I actually went through class 6, and class 8 is just about to finish up now. And it's amazing how many regional leaders we've been able to bring back to the table and just get them interconnected. And I can tell you that there's been some really good examples of organizations in both counties getting together and working on one issue from that experience at WALF. Mm-hmm. So we continue to work on that regional leadership piece with WALF. The other thing I think the foundation has an opportunity here is we are kind of, I sometimes think about us as Switzerland, because we kind of float around the region. Mm-hmm. We're not in any one community. We represent the region.
Surely.
And a lot of times I get to see something that may be happening on the north end and something happening down in South Georgetown that is the identical thing, and being able to connect those people and say, wait a minute, I think if you guys work together, there's a lot more resources that we can bring to the mm-hmm. table. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the other piece of regional leadership that I see, that, you know, we can kind of be that convener in the middle to try to bring more people together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a common denominator that your foundation has with Partnership Grand Strand, mm-hmm. and that's one of the things that we continually work on, bring the right people together, combine resources, and then even just from a brain power perspective, you know, come, mm-hmm. we've all got the same problem. Let's come together and see if we can't collectively figure out a way to at least tackle it,
yep.
if not solve it.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, so, you know, as we opened, we talked a lot about the role of a community foundation, and now we know more about your specific foundation, but I want to make the point that everything that foundations do is really about driving that overall prosperity, and in your case, for generations to come, using the wealth that has been accumulated to date to be able to be put to good use and have good stewardship in the years to come. Mm-hmm. So as we wrap things up and kind of focus about what the future holds for the Waccamaw region and for the Grand Strand and surrounding communities, I'm interested in your perspective as an individual that's toured all this space and kind of you're able to look at things, I think, from a holistic perspective, and I'm interested in what you think about our future.
I think our future is very bright. We've got opportunities here like I've never seen before. For one, I've just continued to be amazed by the growth that's happening here. And growth can be a good thing
good
or
a
bad thing.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I think growth here is a good thing. In a lot of ways, we have a lot of opportunity to continue to grow our industry base here, which is tourism. At the same time, I think we have a great opportunity to diversify because of what's moving here. I think one of the unique opportunities that I continue to see as I'm talking to folks around, especially new donors, is people moving into our region that are coming here because they no longer have to report to an office someplace.
Mm.
And they're working remote, and they're choosing to make the Waccamaw region their home. So they're bringing this diversity of industry right here to our mm-hmm. to our backyard.
And expertise, yeah.
Without a doubt. And I think that is just something that we can continue to leverage as we grow. But also, I worry a little bit about, you know, the issues that come with growth. And that's things that we continue to look at. And I know your foundation is working on, you know, things like transportation.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to need to really get very focused on transportation. And I'm glad to see the Ride 4 effort made it through.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a big help. But at the end of the day, as you look, our population is coming in. I saw figures the other day that had, you know, half of the Horry County population over 55.
It's up to half.
And moving quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that look like in transportation and healthcare needs in the next 10 years?
That's right.
You know, we're going to have to get really outside the box on some of this. So that's just one example.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think those difficulties bring opportunities as well. So.
Yeah, I think that notion of these highly educated, very experienced individuals that are now working remotely here, I think there's magic if we could find a way to connect with them. And, you know, as we mentioned earlier, bringing great minds together to address issues or address, I guess, opportunities that we need in this area in order to continue to thrive. I think that would be a wonderful path to take.
Yes.
And I think that it would further connect those individuals that have maybe retired or semi-retired down here to their local community.
Yep.
They would be bringing their expertise and their knowledge.
Yep.
And we encourage folks to do that. But sometimes I think it's difficult for them to figure out exactly how do I get plugged in? What could I do?
Well, and that I think is an opportunity and also an issue for us right now. And I'll look to the nonprofit sector as an example. The opportunity I see is what you just said. All of this brain wealth is moving into our community. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks are coming and retiring here, and they're bringing a lot of value in what they did in the past.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And they are looking for ways to plug in. And I encourage our nonprofits here to really reach out and be proactive in recruiting these folks into the fold, because this is your next generation of leadership that's going to help your organizations continue to grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. We'll have to continue to work on that one, because yep. I think there's a big, big opportunity embedded in that.
For sure.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to not only share your background, but explain the Waccamaw Community Foundation and all the great things they're doing. We deeply appreciate everything that your foundation does, and I know that all the investors that are part of the Community Foundation appreciate your stewardship and your leadership. So I hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. If there's anything I can ever be doing for you guys, I'm only a phone call away.
Love it. Thank you so much, Mike. Have a good one.
You too.
What a jam-packed educational episode. Wow. I have a much better understanding today of what the Waccamaw Community Foundation is all about, and I hope you do too. I knew that the Waccamaw Community Foundation was stewarding investments for future community growth, but I had no idea how they were managing those donations and endowments to drive growth for generations to come. I think that's awesome. We'll be sure to provide a link to the Waccamaw Community Foundation in the show notes in case you want to get more information or you want to reach out to Mike Mancuso. Mike also commented that every community foundation is just a little bit different. And I think that based on what I've learned today, we are very fortunate to have this local gem right here in the Waccamaw area. We'll be sure to have Mike back on the show to update us more on the things that he's working on. But for now, that's a wrap. And until next time, keep thriving. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. I hope you've enjoyed the info that we've shared today. And if so, please be sure to follow the show so you don't miss any of our future updates. We also welcome any comments, shares, or reviews, but until next time, we hope you stay well and keep thriving.